I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. According to the latest jobs numbers, we've hit the lowest employment rate since 2009. But if you're still looking for work or can't get out of the job that you have, there is something you can do to make your current job better and to boost your shot at finding work. Joining me to talk about how to do this is Harvard business professor Teresa Amabile. I got it right. Her latest book is The Progress Principle, Using Small Wins to Ignite Joy, Engagement, and Creativity at Work. Thank you so much, Professor.
I'm delighted to be here, Callie.
So let's talk about first what you were going after. We've seen, I think anybody just casually knows about all the studies that we've read about how to calculate job satisfaction. But you went an entirely different way. And I'd like people to understand what your approach was.
Well, my research team at Harvard Business School and I decided that we wanted to really understand deeply what makes people happy, motivated, productive, and creative at work. In order to get at that, we decided to ask over 200 professionals working on creative projects inside companies to send us confidential electronic daily diaries every day while they were working on their innovation projects, telling us about their emotions that day, their motivations, and their perceptions of what was going on inside their work environment, and also to briefly describe one event that happened that day that stood out in their mind. Anything at all, as long as it was relevant to the work or the project. We ended up with an absolute treasure trove of data, nearly 12,000 individual daily diary reports. We analyzed those over a period of years to find out what happened at work that really influenced how people felt and whether that influenced their performance.
And one of the things that was interesting that came out of it is that what has been assumed to be the great motivation for people to do their work well and to be happy, and we can talk about how we describe happy in their work, was very different from what what managers understand or what businesses seem to have held in their minds as the reasons that why people do that kind of work or feel good about their jobs.
Absolutely. We discovered that when we looked at the events that characterize people's very best days, and what I mean by best day is when they felt the most positive emotions, the most favorable perceptions of their organization, their bosses, themselves, and when they felt most jazzed about their work, most intrinsically motivated by the work, there was one kind of event that stood out above all others on those days. And it was simply making progress in meaningful work. That's what we call the progress principle. It sounds obvious when you say it, but we discovered it's not at all obvious to managers. Because after we discovered the progress principle, we sent a survey to almost 700 managers in companies around the world. And we gave them on the survey 5 employee motivators. We asked them to rank those motivators in terms of how important they thought they were. We found out that progress did not come out number 1 or number 2. Those were the usual suspects: recognition, incentives, the kinds of things that managers think about when they think about motivating people. Supporting progress in the work turned out dead last in this survey. In fact, only 5% of these managers worldwide ranked progress number 1. We found that it was number 1 by a lot, by a huge margin in our actual study, but managers don't recognize this. They don't understand it.
Are you happy on the job? Are you making progress and you know your manager doesn't recognize it? Give us a call at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Are you working in a place where your creativity is stunted because you just can't get your progress acknowledged and that means something to you, or you're limited in your ability to make progress in your own job and therefore you're a little bit less than happy, as Professor Teresa Amabile has saying in her book, The Progress Principle, Using Small Wins to Ignite Joy, Engagement, and Creativity at Work. 877-301-8970 if you want to share your work story. So what does progress look like? And wouldn't that be in the eye of the beholder? Maybe, in support of the managers here, the clueless managers, they don't know what it looks like, so they couldn't acknowledge it.
We found some really good managers who do know what it looks like, and they're able to see it when it's happening, and they are able to recognize it. And recognition is a big deal. It's a great motivator. But if it doesn't follow from actual progress, people get cynical about being told, oh, you're doing great, you're doing great, when they know that that manager doesn't know what they were really doing. The interesting thing about most professionals, most knowledge workers, is that the kind of work they're doing, they can tell if they're making progress. So a lot of the people we studied were scientists, for example, who were working on experiments to help create new products in their companies. If those experiments work, they know it immediately. They know that they've gotten an interesting result. They know that they've moved forward in gaining new knowledge that will help them create this new product. So that's the nature of the work that a lot of us do. We know when we're getting somewhere with it. We don't need someone else to tell us. Sometimes we do, but very often we don't. So that should be built into the nature of the work itself. The other thing is, managers have to be close enough to the work that's going on with their direct reports so that without prying, without constantly hovering over people and asking them constantly, they should know what's happening. They should know whether meaningful work is getting done each day.
Well, now you just put your finger on something that's just not happening. You know, I got to tell you, Professor, so many managers are really seriously clueless and detached. So you're talking about the engagement of the worker every day, but the manager is detached from the worker. So how can there ever be a meeting of the minds here? How can there ever be those folks that are filling out those diaries finally, you know, coming to work in a holistic environment where progress is understood and where the manager supports that?
Now, Kelly, I don't want to be too hard on managers. Yes. But
I know you're working at the business school. All right.
Well, many of them are clueless. That's right. And we're trying to educate tomorrow's future leaders. So they're not clueless. But truly, these managers have a lot of things on their plate. They're dealing with a very complex world, trying to understand what competitors are doing, what's going on in the external markets, what's happening to the capital markets, where am I going to get funding for my next set of projects, what should my strategy be. It's constantly in flux. The problem is that they can be so focused on those external issues that they take their eye off of what's going on internally. And you know, you can have the best strategy around and the most savvy outlook on what's happening, but if you don't have the people in the trenches executing that strategy creatively and productively every day, you're not going to get very far. So it really takes both. And we actually recommend that managers keep something like a daily progress checklist that they can look at the end of the day to give themselves a little time to reflect on whether they know what their people are doing, and if not, what they need to do to be more engaged. And also to think about, you know, did my people make progress? Were there setbacks? If so, what's standing in the way? What hindrances are there that I might be able to address tomorrow? And a lot of the research we did looked at what managers can do day to day concretely to support progress and what they should avoid doing that inhibits progress.
Well, certainly limiting the obstacles to progress is one big deal. We're at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. You've heard the professor. Do you agree with what she's saying? Do you have a good example to share with us? Seth from Norwell, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio 89.7.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. So I agree with the majority of what I'm hearing. It's hard to argue with all those studies. But I actually had a personal experience with where I work. I have nothing against my manager at all. As a person, he's a great guy. But I feel like with the work, I work for a very big company, and the work that I do is kind of the limit of what I'm able to add to the company. And I feel like there's been one time where I came with an idea of how to a kind of a team building idea of something that I thought was a great idea, and it seemed to kind of get the guys excited. And I brought the idea to my supervisor and or my manager, and it was kind of quickly not dismissed, but kind of turned into something that was very far from my original idea, and it kind of deterred me from going and trying to think in these creative ways in the future when it came to coming up with more efficient ways to work and to make kind of just the day more enjoyable.
So you've lived this. You've lived what the professor is talking about.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Seth. What do you say to that, Professor?
Yeah, this is something that we saw in a lot of the teams and the companies that weren't so effective. In the better teams, better companies, managers were able to take ideas, listen to them, and get them discussed within a group in a way that the ideas were respected. Obviously, you can't accept all ideas, but the ideas themselves were given integrity and respect, and as was the person who came up with the idea. So you don't immediately alter something without giving it a fair hearing. You don't immediately dismiss something without giving it a fair hearing. And we found that the best teams, interestingly, didn't always say, oh, yes, yes, that's a great idea to each other, but they listened to each other and they would constructively challenge each other's ideas. And a really great leader can figure out how to get that dynamic going in a group by modeling it herself or himself.
I hate to be negative, Nanny, and you've chastised me once for doing it. But, you know, I watch Undercover Boss, and I am just shocked at the level of disengagement and understanding of what employees down the line are doing from the CEOs that get in the field. Now, sure, they're at the top of their game, and they often don't get all the way down to the rank and file. But my goodness, they just don't seem to get it. And they're shocked and amazed, and I'm glad to see it. And for those employees that they interact with, they really firsthand discover why a guy, for example, there was a sanitation company, and the guy was shocked that the employee loved cleaning the toilets. That was his job. It was a nasty, dirty job, but he did it well, and he was so motivational, he moved him up in the company, all of that. So you see that all the time. And I have to tell you, Professor, I could never watch The Office because it was not a joke to me. I've lived that. So it's hard for the Seths of the world and the rest who don't get that hearing and feel like, gee, I'm trying to contribute. I want to be here. And it affects the bottom line is what you're saying. You're a psychologist working with business school principals, talking about creativity, productivity, and this as an impact on the bottom line.
It absolutely does impact the bottom line, and I share your outrage. I just want to say that.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, yes. Because we did see these negative dynamics in far too many of the companies we studied. We had 7 companies in our study from 3 different industries, so this isn't specific to one industry or one particular weird company. More often than not, managers were getting this wrong. We had 1 great company out of all 7 we studied where managers got this right consistently, and 1 miserable company where we saw almost nobody ever getting it right. Let me first address the question of whether it affects the bottom line. It absolutely does. We found in our study, using independent measures of how creative the work was, how productive the work was, we found that when people were having days of better inner work life, and what I mean by that is days where they're having more positive perceptions of the place, more pleasant emotions.
Being heard,
exactly, where they have a good feeling about what's going on and they're more engaged in their work. On those days and those weeks, they're actually more likely to come up with creative ideas. Mm. Not only that, they're more likely to come up with creative ideas the next day as well. So if you have a really good day in terms of how you're feeling at work on Monday, not only are you more likely to come up with creative ideas Monday, there's even going to be an effect on Tuesday, regardless of how you're feeling on Tuesday. So there's some important cognitive process that gets set up when people are experiencing what we call good inner work life, positive psychological state. Unfortunately, the dark side is it happens in the negative direction, too. Mm. So if you're having a bad day where your emotions are negative, you feel you're not being heard, you're being blocked in what you're trying to do, that is going to undermine your performance. So 4 dimensions of performance: creativity, productivity, commitment to the work, and collegiality. When people are in a good inner work-life state, they're better colleagues to each other. And when they're not, they're worse colleagues. Other researchers have found that in companies where people are experiencing better inner work life at one point in time, the company itself does better at a later point in time. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about employee retention, customer satisfaction, revenue growth, and profits. So inner work life does drive the bottom line. Our research shows that progress and support for progress drives positive inner work life. So that tells you where managers need to be focusing.
I'm talking with Professor Teresa Amabile. Her latest book is Progress Principle, The Progress Principle, Using Small Wins to Ignite Joy, Engagement, and Creativity at Work. And you've just heard her talk about how it affects the bottom line. Justin from Buzzards Bay, go ahead, please. You're on 89.7 Boston Public Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I've found that there's often disconnect between management and the people that they're supposed to be managing. Now, I was wondering if companies anywhere have considered requiring recommendations from not only prior employers, but prior employees to get a idea of how well the future manager might actually treat their employees.
Excellent question.
Take my question off the air.
Thanks, Justin, for the question. And I wonder, as you answer, Justin, if you'd also talk about your concept of catalysts and nurturers.
Yeah,
or nourishers, rather. Yeah.
So Justin's question is an interesting one. When students come to me for advice on job hunting, I do recommend to them that they try to talk to former employees of the company where they're interviewing, and especially people who worked in that unit, in that division, in that department, to try to understand what the work environment is like, what that manager is like, because that can make a huge difference in your daily work life. In fact, we found that usually the local environment in a department or a team mirrors the broader organizational environment. They're usually pretty similar, either good or bad or kind of so-so. But there were six teams in our study, six out of 26 teams, where there was a mismatch, where the work environment of the team was either much better or much worse than the broader organizational environment. And in those instances where there was a mismatch, it was the local environment that had a much stronger impact on day-to-day inner work life than the broad environment. So finding out about that local manager is crucial. Now, you asked me about catalysts and nourishers. Those are the things that those managers should be doing. Catalysts are things that directly support progress in the work. We found several. I'm only going to highlight three right now. First of all, people need to have clear goals in meaningful work. The progress principle only applies if people feel that their work is meaningful, if they understand what they're doing, clear goals, and why it matters, what the meaning of it is, what the ultimate purpose is. I love the example of the CEO who was shocked to find out that someone cleaning the toilets really thought
love that job.
I walked into the office this morning very early and saw the person who cleans my office. I rarely get to see her, but we do intersect once in a while because she's just ending her work day. She seems to love her work. Now, this is really, I mean, it looks kind of like awful work, right? She's in there cleaning offices of people that she almost never sees, working at night. She had a smile on her face. We chatted for a couple of minutes. And I found out that she loves doing what she does because she thinks that what she does makes our work better. And you know what? She's right. Now, I don't know about that person cleaning the toilets, but I've seen people, even in menial jobs, find meaning in what they're doing if they think about the ultimate purpose of the group, the ultimate purpose of the organization. And great managers are able to help people see that meaning. So clear goals and meaningful work, coupled with the second catalyst, which is autonomy. People need to have some freedom in deciding how to achieve those goals.
And let me interrupt you to say, I love your in caps, no micromanaging, that it's horrible. Continue.
Micromanaging is horrible, but you can get it wrong if you focus too much on the clear goals, right? Clear goals are important, but some managers go overboard with that and they give people goals on how to actually do the work. That's micromanaging. So what you want is to give people a clear sense strategically, this is the mountain we're trying to climb, but autonomy. You decide how to climb it. Use your specific skills, your knowledge, your own creativity to figure out this complex problem or come up with something great for us. So clear goals on meaningful work coupled with autonomy, no micromanagement. Check in with people without making them feel like you're checking up on them constantly. The third catalyst I wanted to highlight is having mechanisms for learning from problems and setbacks. Because in any complicated problem, any really creative work, there's going to be a lot of failures. There are going to be a lot of things that you try that don't work out so well. You might try a new format for the show. Sometimes it'll work great. Sometimes it might not work so great. You have to have an atmosphere where people can sit down and say, okay, let's look at what we tried. Why didn't it work? What can we learn from this? Rather than pointing fingers, trying to blame people, punishing people. If you do that, you're going to make everyone very risk averse, and that's going to smother creativity. It's also going to smother inner work life.
And all of that is nourishing, then?
Well, those are the catalysts.
Yes.
The nourishers, the catalysts are things that support progress, help people drive their work forward. The nourishers are things that directly support inner work life, that make you just feel good about where you're working. The nourishers nourish the human spirit. So they're things like getting basic respect and recognition for your good efforts, feeling like you're valued and your work is valued. Another one is having opportunities for affiliation and camaraderie building with your coworkers, with your close colleagues, so that you can build an atmosphere of trust and emotional support with each other. Those things are really important, too. They don't directly, immediately today, focus on getting this work done, but indirectly, they absolutely provide that kind of support.
Last 30 seconds, Professor. Are you getting from your work, those not just the folks that wrote and were a part of your research, but folks outside of that to look at this and see this is something that we can do. It's available for us to do. Takes a little effort, but it pays off in more ways than one, not just the bottom line, but certainly in a happier population.
That's one of the best things about having written this book. We are constantly getting messages from people, calls from people telling us that this has made a difference. If they're managers, it's made a difference in how they approach their work every day. And if they're employees, they say, boy, I feel validated by this.
Well, I certainly am happy to to highlight this as opposed to The Office, where I get depressed looking at it. So as a reality in my life, Professor, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us about this very important topic. And we've been talking about what it takes to find meaningful work fulfillment and what managers can do to create a work environment that fosters creativity and productivity. And I have been speaking with Professor Teresa Amabile. Her latest book is The Progress Principle, Using Small Wins to Ignite Joy, Engagement, and Creativity at Work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly.
And here's Edgar B. Herrick III in the studio.
Hey, Callie, how's it going?
I'm fine.
All right, good to hear. So I know you've lived in Massachusetts for a while. Are you one of these people who follows the Kennedys really closely?
I hadn't, but growing up, my mother followed them extremely closely, so I felt like
really?
I knew them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, your mother would like this. It's a new film about the matriarch of one of the branches of the Kennedy family tree, a woman described by her own daughter as the most fiercely competitive person I've ever known. That's a quote. So we'll hear from the filmmaker herself, who is a Kennedy.
I'm Callie Crossley.
I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and this is Boston Public Radio.